This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association technical net. Any stations with emergency or priority traffic, please call K2BAR this time. It's a wonderful thing. Nothing was heard. Okay. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association technical net is conducted weekly on a frequency of 146.79 megahertz. And the repeater is operated by the Bergen County FM Association, our brother club, or sister, or sibling, whatever your preference for calling it. In any case, the club looks for your support as well as the Bergen Amateur Radio Association for its net. You need not be a member of any organization. You must be in order to participate in the net. You must, however, be a licensed amateur with appropriate privileges to operate the 2-meter band. The purpose of the net is to discuss amateur radio and its technical aspects. Virtually anything related to the hobby is a technical aspect. Therefore, all subjects are welcome, as long as it's in good taste and, basically friendly. We have a wonderful format here. The format is that you check in with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. You might have neither, and that's fine. We encourage all stations to check in so that we can get a read as to who's here, so that perhaps if someone has a question on a particular topic and we happen to know you have some expertise in that area, we might call on you for some assistance during the net. In any case, at this time, any station beginning with Kilo, it's been a while since we started with the Kilos, any station beginning with Kilo, please call K2BAR with your name, your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment.
This is K2ZO, and I have a question.
Okay, Jim, no problem. K2ZO, you've got that. Any other stations?
K2DSL, David, no questions.
K2DSL, good evening, David. Maybe I should actually put the microphone in front of my face. I changed mics checking everybody into the net tonight. And I realized that I didn't, after I stopped using the desk mic, that I hadn't brought the other mic down into my face. So I apologize. good evening to you, David. K2DSL. Okay. Any other Kilo stations, please call K2BAR. Okay. I think we've trained the Kilo stations to check in late, so that seems to have worked. Any Alpha stations, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. Wow. Okay. That's amazing. Alrighty. Any whiskey stations, please call K2BAR.
W4DSA, Daniel, no questions this evening.
Good evening, Daniel, W4DSA. Very good. Any other whiskey stations, please call K2BAR.
WI2W, Steve, no questions.
WI2W, Steve, I believe our... member at large or trustee designate. Very good. Good evening to you, sir. And any other whiskey stations, please call K2BAR. Alrighty. Any November stations, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether you have a question or a comment.
NJ1W, Dave, no questions.
Good evening, Dave, NJ1W, K2BAR. No problem. Did I hear N3CRT before?
N3CRT, Charlie, where is everybody? That's my question.
I screwed them up. I didn't start with the N's and the A's. I started with the K's and the W's tonight, just to mix it up. All right. Very good. A couple of weeks ago, I forgot the W's altogether.
and IR1, anyway. Alrighty, any other November stations, please call KQBAR. Alrighty, any station wishing to check into the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net, you need not be a member, you need to be a licensed ham with operating privileges in the 2-meter band. Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment.
This is K2AM on a late check-in. No questions, no comment.
Actually, Tony, you're logging in about the time you normally do. We just played with the order tonight, and the kilos were first. Alrighty, Tony, very good. Any other stations with late check-ins, please call K2BAR. Okie doke. Alright, well, the station that the net recognizes K2ZO, K2DSO, W4DSA, WI2W, NJ1W, and 3CRT, and K2AMI. Last call before we get to the question of the evening. I do mean the question. I'm sure we'll have some more, but any other stations wishing to check in with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is KC2SAV/AG.
Congratulations. Your name, sir, and do you have a question or a comment?
My name is Al, and I have no questions.
Okay, Al. Congratulations on your recent upgrade. That's super. Any other stations wishing to check in, please call K2BAR. Alrighty, well, let's get down to business here tonight. Gotta use this foot switch. I'm operating barefoot. It is so comfortable in my office. I'm in a t-shirt and shorts, dressed pretty well, actually. And I kind of got a loose t-shirt on, so I'm real comfortable. And I'm barefoot, so it's kind of like, the only thing that would make it better is if, I could have like a margarita or maybe a glass of chilled wine or something. But that would not be appropriate to my getting on the air. I have known that a long time ago. So, on that really scary thought and note, I'm going to turn it over to somebody who's more prudent. K2ZO, Jim, over to you. K2BAR, your question, sir.
Okay, K2BAR. This is K2ZO. I'm trying to come up with a inline probe for coupling to an oscilloscope for monitoring RF waveform. I can buy one for $200, but I gotta believe that looking at that thing, it's only a little box with a trimmer on it, a capacitor of some kind. I was wondering if anybody has gotten any good ideas. Gotta drop a second. Okay. Presently, I use a monitor scope, which is fine, but it's not a high, tech scope. And what I do is I couple to the vertical plates with just a capacitive voltage divider, which kind of works fine. And most older type of monitor scopes work that way. However, I'm in the process of planning to buy a much higher power. A much higher frequency rated scope, so I'll be able to just use the, the 100 megahertz or 200 megahertz input to monitor. I need a capacitive voltage divider that's going to cover from, let's say, 160 meters to 6 meters. And I'm curious if anybody has a circuit for one or before I have to reverse engineer the one I looked at that someone's selling for almost $200. Back to that, SK2ZO.
Now, there's a good question. I don't have the answer off the top of my head. God knows I could design one. You could too. I know this. Don't lie to me. Do we have anybody on frequency who has experience designing them or something similar? Someone who's maybe made a other RF probes, maybe even couplers. I'm actually thinking, Jim, maybe couplers taking SWR readings as a starting point, and then, as you say, use a voltage divider, a capacitive voltage divider, finish off the circuit. The problem I see is that is the spectral range you want to cover maybe a bit ambitious. I mean, you could do it, but if you want consistent readings, I would suggest the upper half of the frequency range you address separately than the lower half, or maybe even the lower third. Over.
Good evening.
Well, it's quite evident that this thing that they sell is, trying to remember the name of the outfit. But what it is, it's a small box with two PL-259s on it, and a connection going out there that goes to the vertical input of your scope, and then there's a little adjustment on that thing, a level adjustment or a capacitive. What I was thinking about is just tapping off, going through with the RF, tapping off, say, with a 50-ohm resistor, small resistor, then going to a series capacitive divider and take that center tap into two capacitors. And that way, if I made a smaller bypass, so that, on the lower frequencies, it doesn't bypass much, or in the higher frequency, you know what I mean, to try to even it out. That's what I was thinking of. Of course, if you can make one band job, that's no problem at all. You just do what a bird watt meter does. You may put a parallel line to the slot in there. But I was trying to come up with some way of making this thing, since somebody has already done it, and I don't want to spend $190 because I'm cheap. Go ahead.
Yeah, but you have more toys if you're cheap. You figured that out, right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. All right. Yeah, I mean, that's what basically I was thinking of doing is basically a coupling device. Are you looking just to measure magnitude, or are you looking to measure phase? Because I know I've seen it done where basically people will take the forward and the reverse, if you will, through two taps, if you will, and run one on the x-axis, one on the y-axis. That would also be interesting. What are you trying to measure?
RF linearity. In other words, I can do the trapezoid pattern, and I can probably make up something that'll do that, or well as an RF envelope. But I'm planning on buying a two-channel scope, so what I could do is make a probe that would be, say, work off the exciter on one channel and off the amplifier on another channel, and I could kind of look at the superimposal. It'd be very interesting, since I've just built a two-tone tester here, it'd be very interesting to do that as a comparison, just to see what's going on. Just an idea, but I was thinking about how I could very simply make a probe like that would work without... work over a fairly wide range of frequencies.
All right. But basically you're taking a 50-ohm load and then tapping off the hot side with a voltage divider network, it's a capacitive voltage divider. And then from that center point, you'll take a resistor, some high Z device to, or high R device, actually, to basically just... adjust the amount of actual DC voltage, or actually that's AC voltage, pardon me, AC voltage actually comes across your scope probe, or scope terminals, I should say. I'm thinking there's something in the handbook for that. I don't have a handbook handy. This is embarrassing. Ever since we remodeled, that's one thing I need to do is restore my bookshelves to sensibility. Right now they're just acting as horizontal surfaces to hold my junk box in view. And as Charlie's been here since that's occurred, and I think Jim has too, and I've kind of become overwhelmed in that regard. But I'm thinking that that's the circuit you want. At 80 meters, I'm not so sure it matters a whole lot. Why don't you just take a 50-ohm load, And in fact, I can lend you a 30 dB attenuator that's a dummy load, basically, a big honkin' 500 watt job. And it's got a on the back end port at the back. You could take that and use that as your probe spot. At 30 dB down, who cares?
W2AKR repeater.
Okay, well, no, that's not exactly what I want to do. What I want to do is take this off the 50 ohm coax, going out to either the antenna or the dummy load. Of course, you'd be using a dummy load when you're making some tests, but I monitor. I use a scope all the time. I mean, I don't even look at any meters at all. I can take a look at the scope, and I can see if everything is loaded properly, and I can peak my output and everything. And the commercial units that feed the vertical plates come off with like a 560 ohm resistor and then a capacitive voltage divider, and they go right into the vertical plates. So I guess my question was, is that all this thing that they sell for $200 is? I find it hard to believe, but I guess it's true. If I build this, will it go right into the vertical amplifier and work? Be interesting.
Yeah, do you know the values of capacitor? Capacitors, pardon me.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at a circuit right now in a commercial unit, and they come off with here's the 50 ohm going through, they come off with 560 ohm resistor, and a couple of 100 picofarad, and then to ground, a couple of, it gets as small as like a 1 picofarad, so it's not much, and I guess my question is, if you can get enough drive right smack into the vertical plates, what's going to happen when you take that into an amplifier? You should be able to drive the pants off it. At least that's my thinking of. I don't know. But anyway, it'll be very interesting.
Yeah, do you want to sketch out the circuit and email it to Charlie and me, and we'll put it up on the website and as a starter point, and we can go from there? I mean, what I'm thinking is the reason why it's $200 is because it's a piece of calibrated instrumentation goodie. It's the equipment, that the parts are reasonably close tolerance, unless this thing's really a piece of junk, and it's probably got a piece of machined metal on it. Other than that, that's why it costs $200.
Well, it's not calibrated. Obviously, if there's a pot on the side of it, it's not calibrated to adjust the drive lever. Not too worried about that. That I can live with. I can calibrate whatever I need, do that with a known load, 1 meters of PEP things. I'm not too interested in that. What I'm interested in is displaying two waveforms on a dual tray scope, and one of them being the exciter and the other one being the amplifier.
Yeah, and you're going to put one into each channel, right?
Affirmative.
Okay, well, that sounds pretty straightforward. So the 50 ohm load is tapped by a 560 ohm resistor, and then that feeds into a voltage, that feeds into a capacitive voltage divider that's, 100 over 1 pump?
Well, you can adjust it. There's a tap on there for adjusting the level, and that capacitive voltage divider changes. But that's what they do when the heat gets in the Kenwoods and stuff like that. And if you look at the circuit in the handbook, they use a balanced feed with a tuned circuit on a pickup coming off into the vertical plates. I don't want to have to go through all that crap. And again, since I'm driving an amplifier, I should have plenty of drive and plenty of gain. All I just have to do is figure out how to not screw things up when I sample the signal.
Yeah, absolutely. I seem to remember seeing something in the handbook or the operating manual under station test equipment that showed this circuit. But this is what's coming to mind in my head, and I'm just at a total loss for where a handbook is right now, so I apologize. If you wouldn't mind sketching that out in some way, either using TTY artwork or even a stick diagram using just nodes and sticks. Just mark the node as to whether it's a capacitor or resistor and whether it's variable or not. I think that's probably all we need.
Well, if I look at a typical one here, they use a 560-ohm resistor, 3-watt resistor. This is now tied into the center conductor of your 50-ohm coax. In other words, the coax is opened up by means of a small box, 560 ohms. And then there's a capacitive voltage divider consisting of a 12 picofarad, and then a number of others, four different that can switch, 12, 5, 3, and 1. So in one case, you've got 50% of it by 12 and 12, and then you've got 12 and 1, 12 and 5, 12 and so. And then that point is taken off to the vertical plates. Now, as I say, can I take that point off and go into the amplifier? I would think that I'm going to drive the pants off it with that signal.
Yeah. Wow. So you're basically you're just tapping into the to the center conductor with a 560K, and then in series with that is a 12 puff, and in series with that is any combination of 12, 5, 3, or 1 puff going off to what I'll euphemistically refer to as the hot lead of the plates, and the other is to ground, I guess.
That's right. And I capacitively couple to one of the to the vertical plate. The other one, the other side, is going to ground through a capacitor, and that's it. And you know, you have to remember that PAMS never had access to fancy oscilloscopes years ago. So consequently, monitor scopes of the time, even commercial ones, just took the signal and hung it onto the vertical plates. Or people modified old Heath kits, and that's the one that's shown in the handbook to do that. But what I want to do is go into a, you know, a used, maybe $400 scope, something that sold for $2,000 8 years ago, and then go into the amplifier of that, and then take it and see what I can do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I have a dual trace tech myself sitting, it's up here, it's in the hallway, it's buried, but I have a dual trace tech as well. Yeah, you got me thinking, Actually, it's a fairly decent one, too, at that. I've sketched this out. What I'll do is I'll email it. I'll type it up and email it to you just for verification and make sure I have it right.
Yeah, well, that couldn't be simpler, but as I say, my question is, when I look at this circuit, what I was hoping is somebody might have seen this thing or had more experience with it, or even a commercial unit, you know, some of these things use a parallel pickup, terminated in one side with a resistor and in the other side with some kind of a capacitor, and you know, like the birds do. But most of those are, of course, for a particular frequency.
Yeah, I'm a little. I mean, you say drive the pants. I mean, I'm looking at this thing, saying, "Wow, this thing is hardwired to the center conductor." And I would have inductively coupled the signal myself. I'd feel a lot better about it that way. I'm just not feeling great about taking my 100 watt transmitter, or worse yet, kilowatt amplifier, and, you know, essentially tying it through a resistive and capacitive network directly to the plates of my scope that I'm about to incinerate.
Yeah, then think about it with my Henry 3K.
Yeah, does not sound pretty. Anybody want to comment on this? And while we're at it, any late check-ins? This is K2BAR.
K2BAR.
Go ahead, Justin. Log in. On the net. Any other stations? Actually, first of all, do you have a question or a comment for the net, Justin?
No, I just think that I tuned in one night and seeing one tomorrow. I've
Very good. Welcome aboard. Any other stations for that? Then I have a comment back for Jim. I had another thought. Okie doke. Jim, here's a question for you, or just an observation. If you're not only do you run the risk of incinerating your scope, or at least its input circuit, or both, but you're going to need two of these things essentially in parallel. Well, they're not in parallel. One's going between the exciter and the amplifier, and the other one's coming off the output of the amplifier before it goes to the antenna. So I guess you'll be right, boy. Never mind. I was just thinking they might be in parallel. No, they're not. But boy, oh boy, oh boy. Well, actually, for test purposes, you probably do want them in parallel. So I would inductively couple them. That would be my advice on yet another level, because you're going to need two of these things to make sure that they read accurately. You're going to want to take two of these circuits on the, let's say with the exciter, and run them to each channel to make sure that the channels are all square.
That's right. And this outfit, this great RF or whatever the heck it's called, company, that sells this system to do all this, has a low power and a high power and a very high power pickup. They all appear to be the same physically, and there appears to be some kind of just one single adjustment on it, some capacitive voltage divider. But my other thought was, and you're starting to see what I've been working with here in my head, scary myself with thinking about that much RF getting coupled into the circuit. Maybe the answer is to use a toroid and pull off the signal from a toroid, and that way you have a tap or a voltage divider on it. Maybe that may be it. So be very interesting to see what comes up. But I would have thought by now somebody had already done this.
Well, you know what? If you're going to do the toroid, that's probably a good idea. If you're going to do a toroid, you're going to have to run a bifilar core where the turns parallel each other perfectly through the core and have roughly very closely the same length. And then run one to one probe and one to the other, to your dividers, and then from your dividers, you can then, you know, calibrate, let's say, two sets of these things, and go back and forth to make sure that between or among four coils, if you will, four taps on two cores, that the circuitry, the support circuitry, the resistor and the capacitors are all actually calibrating out pretty much the same way. Because otherwise you stand a chance of not having them the same. And you know, as you know, with these matters, the accuracy is going to be a function of variability. And I'm just thinking that by running a bifilar winding and then go out to two circuits, that way you can validate the calibration of the two circuits minus the tap, minus the inductive tap, if you will. Replicate that again, and then you can move the two divider networks from either input or output, you know, independently. In fact, that's the way I think I would do it. I think I would set it up so that the divider network, or the two divider networks, would have an AB switch each, one each winding of one each of two toroids. One would be on the input, one would be on the output of the amplifier.
That would be one way to do it. So I'm not too concerned about absolute values. I'm not going to use this for any calibrated measurements or anything like that, because I do have a PEP reading watt meter in there and stuff like that. But what I'm looking for is, you know, phase shifts and happened between an exciter and an amplifier, and also the ability with the two-channel scope to superimpose two signals with a, obviously with the attenuator on one side, with a two-tone tester and just take a look at them. That is the ultimate way of just determining how linear your amplifier is.
Yeah, I would agree, but the reason why I was thinking about that is not so much for absolute value, but for stability. As this stuff heats up, God knows what it's going to do.
I don't think it's going to make that much difference there. I think that the big thing is just going to be, can you do it, and is it going to have some kind of weird phase shifts that you're going to have to design some kind of circuit at each particular band to cancel it out? That's what I'm trying to get away from, having a single probe. Okay, I don't care if maybe the difference between, let's say, 160 and 6 meters is 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 dB difference. I can probably crank the gain up on a scope to make that up. But I'd just like to have one probe that would work.
Absolutely. I don't see a company called Great RF, by the way.
Maybe that's not the right name. I will send you the information. I'll send you an email with the information on that at that company that makes this very expensive measuring device.
Yeah, okay, and I think an inductive coupling is definitely in order here. What you may need to do is maybe even put a resistive, you don't want to put a resistive divider in there. Yeah, stick with a capacitive divider. I mean, and my guess is 12 puff. That should work, certainly at the low end. At the high end, I guess. You know, the circuit you saw is good for 160 to 6 meters. Well, if that's the case, then fine. But I would question its accuracy, and again, you don't care as long as it's within reason at the high end. But I guess it'll work.
Comment?
Mr. Daniel, and W4DSA, K2BAR.
Just so you know, the actual website name is cleanrf.com, cleanrf.com.
I knew it was close.
Okie doke. CleanRF.com. Alrighty, I will add that to the notes for this evening's goodies. Just out of curiosity, does everybody here have an ARRL address? If you don't have an ARRL address, give me your email address, and I'll add that to the list, and I'll send you a copy of this. And Jim, you can edit it as you see fit.
Late check-in.
Victor, any questions, comments over the net?
Yeah. I just wanted to check in and say hello, and good evening, everybody. Got home a little late.
Yeah, you went out for a run. Good luck. God bless you. Okay, do you have any questions or comments for that?
That's a negative.
Okay, was there another station? One more time. Was there another station for the net? Please call K2BAR. Okay, could have sworn I heard another one. Alrighty. Well, cleanrf.com. Very good. Does everybody here have an ARRL address? Anybody who does not, please call K2BAR. Okay, very good. KC2SAV. Al, I want to just check with you real quick. Congratulations on your upgrade. What are your goals and aspirations for amateur radio now that you've upgraded? And do you have an ARRL email address?
That's affirmative.
Okay, let's go to Kilo Charlie 2, Sierra Alpha Victor.
Yes, Kilo Charlie 2, Sierra Alpha.
I am impressed. impressed. This many of them were all members on this net, every one of us. That's pretty cool. Alrighty. Any other stations want to make some comments about Jim's measurement enterprise? Please call K2BAR.
Good evening.
AB2XT, I'm a late check-in.
AB2XT, go ahead, John. Any questions, comments, confusions for the net?
Nothing on Jim, but I was listening for the last 10 minutes and wasn't able to get to the transmitter. I do have a question for later on.
So noted. Okay, no problem. Alrighty, any other stations with comments for Jim's topic of, should we say, using a scope to measure RF profile, if you will, of a carrier, linearity of a carrier using a scope? Please call K2BAR. Alrighty. Jim, any further comments from you?
No, just take a look at that outfit, that clean RF outfit, and see what they get to those little boxes. And they can't be much as far as what's inside them, so I figure I can come up and duplicate something. But it's going to be nice to monitor both channels. You know, I just built a two-tone tester here from Elecraft. Yeah, it's pretty cool, and so we'll be using that to do a lot of these tests, but now I got to get a better method of sampling. So back to that, K2ZO.
Wow. Okay. Very cool. I'm looking at this site. My. Yeah, they're not looking to sell to the hams. That is for sure. No siree. Although there is a ham here. KW0 Alpha Whiskey, did I notice that call sign? Or is my vision playing games in there? Notice on the bottom of the main page, next to links, there's a, yeah, KW0 AM. His Kenwood 850 DSP 100 project. Oh boy. God bless him. Alrighty. Well, maybe he is looking to sell the hams. Really, really well-financed hams. Nice toys. Alrighty. So noted. Let's move on. Jim, thank you, first of all, for bringing that topic. I think that's something that we all could do fairly easily if we had a scope. And so, and building this probe is, you know, especially once there's something reasonably in the way of a proven design that we know has some workability, I think is something that a lot of guys in this club would benefit from building. And maybe we could do that as a kit night project, build a bunch of them real quick. And that might be a useful thing, to say the least. So, AB2XT, John, have you seen Bella yet? Oh, no, tomorrow night it opens up in Westwood. That's right. From K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is AB2XT. No, I haven't seen it, obviously. see it next this weekend. My question is on the frequency measuring test that the ARRL is going to be doing on November 15, I think. Has anyone in the club ever done it before, and what kind of equipment do you need to do a frequency measuring test?
Oh, boy. This is like really, really good night tonight, aren't we? We're not getting the how do I ground my station questions. What most people do is heterodyne a known reference to the observed carrier, and then discern a differential and come up with a frequency mathematically. That's basically what you do. You have to know the characteristics of your receiver. You have to know how stable you are, stability of any reference oscillator you might use. There are other ways of doing it as well, but that's the age-old way. I'm going to see if anyone else on the net has a methodology that is either antique or new that might be better. Please call K2BAR.
Nano to T-Mobile.
Jerry, good evening, NO2T. Go ahead with your how to do an FMT better than a red box, if you will, or better than a poor red box.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, which is heterodyne the signal so you have an audio signal, and then use a counter to measure the audio signal. This way you can measure to a fraction of a hertz, depending on how well you know the external signal. Back when I was interested in that, I used a BT221, which I left on 24/7, which I calibrated against WWV, and then used that to produce a beat note. But if you have a crystal frequency, even a color crystal frequency, you know, color oscillator from the TV, you can get the 80-meter ARRL frequency, and that's one way of doing it. But that's how I did it back in the year one. And you can get down to hertz or two that way. But to get to millihertz, you ought to look it up in the handbook. And you also look it up on the league, because there was a very excellent description on frequency standards of the last frequency test that I read, I think it's even in QST, showing how they were getting down to millihertz. With that, I'm in my driveway, so I'm going to say 7-3 to war. This is NO2T Mobile, clear at the final.
Wow, down to millihertz. That's pretty cool. Alrighty. So, John, if you're a Native Laurel member, what you might want to do is log into the members only site, enter frequency measuring, frequency measurement techniques, frequency measurement test, and kind of go through all those permutations and see what you come up with. It wouldn't hurt to do a Google search on that as well, but basically the methodology that I described is probably a good start. The other thing you can think about is using a computer now. You could use the sound card on a computer to fairly accurately read out to at least a reasonable fraction, maybe one decimal point of a hertz. Two might be a little tricky, but you know, assuming you know what, again, what your reference oscillator is, you know, the resultant signal is zero beated and fed into the audio input of your computer, that would give you a very nice frequency measurement, let's say to at least a tenth of a hertz, I would think, without too much trouble. And if you could find a spectrum analyzer mechanism, you know, some sort of audio spectrum analyzer, you might be able to expand the, you know, the sweep and get down to, as Jerry said, you know, hundreds of thousandths of a hertz. You could perhaps do that if you could broaden out the spectrum analyzer and just by narrowing the scope of interest across the screen. Over.
Okay, AB2XT. That's pretty interesting. Now, I had a problem a year ago. I built a frequency counter, and it has a couple of other problems, but I was trying to calibrate its reference oscillator, the microprocessor thing that I built, and it had ultimately a 2 megahertz counter, which is gating 1 second. I wanted a 1 hertz device. So I had 2 megahertz gating the microprocessor, and the microprocessor has certain hardware which runs without software interrupts and whatnot. In any case, the idea was to try and get the 2 megahertz crystal, and I tried beating it against 10 megahertz WWV and putting it into a receiver, listening to the audio until it became a low moan, and then looking at the audio with an oscilloscope. Does that sound about the same, roughly the same idea?
NRTT with a comment.
You get the beep first. Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay, one of the problems, of course, is that your sideband, your filters in your radio cut off at low frequency. You're better off beating it against CW, using CW rather than a sideband on your radio. This gives you a 600 hertz beat frequency or whatever. Sometimes it's 600, sometimes it's 800 from WWB. That, you can use that to feed into the computer and do the counting. But if you try to do an audio, the roll-off of your IF filter is such that you can never be more than a few hertz. You can hear it go to a low rumble, but by that time the amplitude is so damn low that you can't make any sense of it. But you do it with your CW. You're working up to a constant 600 or 800 hertz signal. That you can do very accurately. So your technique is correct, but not down at DC, but up to an audio frequency. 73 NOTT.
W2AKR repeater.
Yeah, and John, one of the other things about that is that by using a the computer, you can kind of get your frequency alignment exactly where you want it to be.
Okay, because one of the thoughts I had was, okay, so I've messed around with the ARRL thing. When I was trying to calibrate the counter, I was figuring, I don't know what I've really got here. I could be plus or minus 1,000 or something. And if everybody does it this way, then people all around the country have frequency counters they think are calibrated, but they're really, all over the place. If they all brought them into the U.S., the Bureau of Standards or whatever, they'd get all kinds of crazy results. Does that sound about right? Particularly what Jerry's saying, that you could be off by a couple of kilohertz, I guess.
Yeah, I would definitely make a point of getting it, the way Jerry described, and get it up in frequency, and that way you don't have amplitude roll-off.
Okay, that's an eye-opener. That's very, very interesting. Good to talk to people that know what they're doing. Back to net.
No problem. I'm actually surveilling something on the ARRL website as we speak, but we'll see what happens. Oh, I entered frequency measurement, and there's an article on that frequency measurement with ways to improve accuracy, a PDF file, page 1234. That's the first hit. So frequency measurement on the ARRL website as a search will be all you need. I think that will get you what you're looking for. There's also a frequency measuring test 2006 back to basics article, and the test schedule, well, that's the past test schedule, but anyway, I think there's plenty of goodies there for your intellectual stimulation here. I think this will work just fine. Any other comments or questions on the subject from anybody else, please call K2BAR. Okie doke. John, back to you, AB2XT, K2BAR. Finals?
Okay, I'll read up on what you suggested there. I was curious whether this is of any interest to people, or it's kind of a boring thing to do. Anybody have any comments on that?
This topic?
No, I mean doing the ARRL frequency test. Is that kind of passe or whatever? It doesn't seem to generate much interest.
I think it's fine. Good Lord. I mean, more people should do that.
Yeah, okay. It kind of caught my eye because of the idea that I tried to calibrate a frequency counter and then had no idea what it was. Because obviously if you put in a crystal and it reads something on there, that doesn't mean the crystal itself hits those numbers. They have the drift and parts per million accuracy and whatnot. So there was sort of a rock and a hard place type of a problem in in that case. And what Jerry mentioned is pretty interesting. It just gets down to, you know, something pretty close. And so I'll give it a shot. It's next Wednesday. I'll see what I can do with it.
Okay, the humorous thing. There were two things, three things I'll tell you about this article. I just quickly scanned it. It's from September 1965. Its first comment, or its first sentence, starts with the phrase, a BC-221, just like Jerry said, which I had as well. That's very funny. Frequency meter, that's funny. And then the article didn't quite fit the page, so there are two strays at the bottom of the page. One is practically every amateur uses the standard frequency services of WWV, blah, blah, blah. And then it talks about a pamphlet you can get from the National Bureau of Standards, now called the National Institute of Technology, Science and Technology, pardon me. For a copy, you can get a copy of the pamphlet for 15 cents from the Superintendent of Documents from the U.S. Government Printing Office in Washington. Anyway, I find that amusing. The second stray is even more amusing, but it's not quite relevant. The Post Office Department, remember them? Promises faster mail service with the new zip codes. Use yours when you write League Headquarters. Use ours, too. It's 06111. I just find that amusing.
And with an SASC, that also helps. Yeah, it's funny when they talk about putting a 15-cent or, you know, send a $1 for a coupon. Nowadays, everything's on the Internet. I'm going to take a look at this next Wednesday and see how it works out. I'll let you know if I have any success.
Excellent. So, frequency measurement on the AWRL website will kick off this article rather immediately. I think that's great. Any other comments or questions on frequency measurement, please call K2BAR. Okay. Very fine. In any case, I did find one other subject of interest, of sorts. I'm the proud owner of five different Olinco mobile rigs. Two on 2 meters, two on 222, and one on 440. I'm thinking about getting another 440 one, but that's neither here nor there right now. In any case, one of the things that is of interest to me is, loading its memories, it's a pain in the neck to do, and similarly to my problem with Kenwood Handy Talkies around here, is we got five or six of them kicking around, all identical. You need some way to manage memories, and of course the Kenwood software is for free. Just buy the cable, and there's a basic piece of software you can get from Kenwood. But Olinco gives you free drivers for their piece of proprietary USB hardware, which I did buy, frankly in frustration, because the ones I bought from some third party didn't work, much to my chagrin. My guess is it's from some entrepreneur who is trying not to share his proceeds with the People's Liberation Army, I was happy to have the Olinco one and have it work. I did run across a piece of software which is absolutely marvelous, and it's run by a company called CBT Incorporated, and it works ecstatically well, or exceedingly well. It's a cute little package. It comes on a CD. That's the good news. The bad news is that I can't get it out of the packet, the radio right now, or the computer right now, so I have left it in. But the company is called CBT Incorporated, and their Olinco software drives all sorts of different radios, but I was very, very pleased with it, and I strongly recommend it for those who might be interested. It's called CBT Inc. If you go to their website, .net, and very, very good stuff. And the one, let me just drop it. I bought the Elenco ERW7, which is a USB connect serial kind of device, and the other end has a stereo connector on the other side. It's a ERW7. Pardon me, is the normal USB one, and if you want RS-232 instead of USB, I think it's ERW7C or something. And Elenco has the driver software on their website. It's free, no problem. But the CBT software was just fantastic. The one thing that I made an operator error, and that was, it's true confessions time, I read the manual to the radio and noticed that they have this slave cloning thing, so you can clone radios through the front panel, through the stereo jack that's in the front, which normally is used for GPSs and other goodies on the Elenco mobile rigs. Well, in my case, I kept trying to put it in slave mode or master mode, and you need to do nothing. If you buy the CBT software, my heartfelt advice is load the drivers, plug in the cable, install the CBT software, plug all the cables in to the radio and to the and to the computer, and let the software do its job. The other thing is that the software will read a standard output file from the AWRL travel software, traveling repeater guide, and that's marvelous as well. So you can create extra files for all the repeaters you might need in a particular area. And for those who travel, this is just wonderful. I'm actually going to keep one of these cables in my truck, in the USB hub, so that way, if I need to from the laptop, I can just look up from the AWRL directory repeaters in the area I might be traveling in, pull them, cross-load them into the memories, and just dump them right in. Of course, I have a default home configuration as well, so I can always restore myself back to the home configuration should I be in the home turf. But this is just a marvelous little device, and you know, if you've seen my console, it's got the computer on it, and then it's got three Elenco mobile rigs, and so you just call up the Elenco control software version for which your radio you're plugged into, load its memories, and away you go. So that's basically my tale of success and also stupidity with trying to invoke functionality that need not be invoked. Everything is under software control. You need not touch the radio other than to power it up and plug the connector in. It's a wonderful thing. Anybody else have any adventures that they'd like to talk about in their ham shacks? This is K2BAR.
Zipper.
Oh, we had a couple stations in there. Something about Kipper? Okay, I think someone's trying to get in without using the repeater. I'm going to let the repeater drop. If you wait 5 seconds and then come up on frequency, we'll find out who you are. This is K2BAR. Okay, I guess not. There were two stations trying to compete for signal. If your station begins with a kilo, please come now. If your station begins with whiskey, please come now. If your station begins with November, please come now.
N3CRT.
Okay, now it's N3CRT. Who was the other station? Okay, there were two stations competing. One was N3CRT. Who's the other one? Okay, Charlie, it's all yours. N3CRT, K2BAR.
My Elenco can do alphanumerics. Oh, let me back the power down. Does that software overlay the alphanumerics on different memory channels?
Good evening.
Someone's on sideband. Single sideband, but I missed who they were. Oh well, I couldn't quite tune them in fast enough. All right.